Moscow, you have Moscow, and you have the rest of Russia. They are not the same.
No. They're not a poker face, because, you know, if you're walking around smiling, people either think you're high, or they think something's wrong with you, or they think that you're feeble and weak, and it's like an invitation to steal from you, or... is rural and really like dilapidated, just the falling apart Soviet buildings. I mean, it's a difficult culture, and it's difficult to understand the language, the history. It is very deep. It is very complicated.
It's your favorite opinionated legendary Amerislav. And what I really love about today's conversation is that it's with a fellow East European, American East European, and there's this thing that happens when us American East Europeans start conversing about life, about America, about the contrast, about the background, about history, about current American culture. There's a spark because it's immigrants in and of itself have a quite unique overlap in opinions, but when you come from the same area or same corner of the world, it gets exponentially better. So here we are with Kat.
And before we jump into the official episode today at Fearless Well, I just want to point out this is hashtag Team No Delusion. So everything you'll see, intro, mid-tro, intro, recording, everything is raw footage, one take. I will not be doing or redoing or participating in the whole Hollywood thing where everything needs to look polished or fake or perfect, because that's just not real life. So with that being said, welcome into the real world, and now we're jumping into the episode.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone here at Fearless Wealth. With you, one favorite opinionated Slav. But today also, another opinionated Slav.
Hi, everyone. My name is Katarina Berry. I'm so honored to be here.
Let's quickly, before we go all the way in, because I have so much to discuss with you, because you do so many things. And see, like, just randomly my laptop is making sounds, so I'm taking that all the way out. You and I met, what I think... in one of the Melanie and Lair groups, mm-hmm. Right?
I think so. Yes. I think so, yes.
Yes. And we became Facebook friends. And mm-hmm. Now I am a huge cheerleader of you. And I just, you have your own business. You are a multifaceted business person mm-hmm. who supports herself with witchcraft and spirituality. And... is here for capitalism.
That is a great description. I agree to all of these things. Yes. So I have a business. I do a variety of things. I mentor women. I work with women mostly. Psychic work is part of it. Another aspect of it is I'm an art model, so I work with a lot of artists for portrait posing, figure posing, and things like that. And so I'm starting to help women with that as well, how to just take their clothes in front of the artists and get painted and feel beautiful about themselves. And my mother is an artist. She's Russian, American now, but originally Russian. I'm half and half. My dad's from South Carolina, Charleston. And I grew up, half of my life has been spent in growing up in Moscow, and then half of my life has been in the United States. Just turned 30, so 15 years over there, 15 years over here. So yeah, basically that's the story.
So for the listeners, because we have mostly American listeners and some Western European, I would describe, I always describe you have Moskva, you have Moscow, and you have the rest of Russia. They are not the same.
No. And I have not seen a lot of Russia. You know, I think we took a cruise one time when my American side of the family, my American grandfather, he was a military attaché for United States in what was the falling Soviet Union, the perestroika, or the beginning of the new chapter, what seemed like that at the time. And so we had some relatives coming in and out occasionally. And so I think one time we took a cruise down Volga River and saw some, you know, other cities in Russia, but it's a huge country. And I've basically spent my whole life in Moscow. But yes, it's vastly different, the capital and the rest of the country, which is largely still a third world country, probably
right.
even worse
what,
now.
Right, right. What I love about Moscow is that, like, there's so much money, but also so much poverty. Like, it's such a... Well, you know more about that. I would love to hear more about that. And before we completely... dive in. No, okay, how was it? You literally grew up half-half, both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so both of my parents and me, I'm the only child. We had our unit of three, my mom, my dad, and me. We lived in Moscow in a rented apartment. My dad started a business probably he was about my age now, late 20s, early 30s. He had a business printing t-shirts in Russia, and he had some American connections there. So places like McDonald's and Hard Rock Cafe opened in Moscow around that time. And so he had some t-shirt orders because it's such an American thing. And once these companies were in Moscow, they wanted the branding, you know, all the stuff. So he kind of put this idea together with some friends, and it was popping off from what I heard. But then Mafia came along, because it's not America and it's Russia. And it was a pretty wild time where there was a lot of land grabbing going on, as, you know, as it goes, and these kind of revolting states when the things are uncertain and there's unrest and laws are being changed. And so my parents basically lost the company because there was like a threat, demand for like 40% of profit is what the mafia asked for, and it's like, we'll protect you for that or else. And it's, you don't want to find out what or else means. So I'm laughing about it, but it can be very scary, you know. But basically, they lost that company, they sold it off, and my dad started a computer fixing business. He was kind of self-taught, and that was our life. My mom was painting, I was going to school, and I had one biggest difference, I think, that I had from other folks that I was growing up with, was the fact that I got to visit United States just a few times when I was very little, because my parents didn't have that much money to go back and forth. And last time I was here, literally here where I live now in Charleston, South Carolina, when I was 5 years old. And I remember just this beautiful weather and the beach, the ocean, the seagulls, the people smiling on the streets. You know, you don't see that in Moscow.
Oh, we must talk about that.
Yeah. Everyone's like, hi, how are you, on the street with like a huge smile. I'm like, what is this place? And I still have these memories. I'll still go down the same pathway at the beach, and I'll just remind myself how grateful I am to be here, because basically since that core memory at five, all I ever wanted to do was move to United States, because first of all, I knew that option was available for me. I felt guilty and a little bit ashamed because I had this family here and I was born with an American citizenship, and a lot of people in Russia, and I think in a lot of other countries in general, would kill for that at times. Like, it would be to die for. Like, that's an opportunity, you know, that most people don't get, or they have to risk their lives oftentimes to get that chance. And if we think of North Korea, then, you know, it literally is like, it's you're probably going to lose your life trying, you know, and here I had it. And so, but still there was another part of me that was like, yeah, and I have it, so I'm not ever going to waste it. So it's not an option that I'm not going to go for it as soon as possible. So that was my the biggest dream, was just to get out of where I was most of my life.
like, I feel this so deeply, obviously, because... So one thing, the not smiling, I'll never, like, people do not smile in East Europe, whether it's a cultural thing. I remember one of my UK friends asking one of my Estonia friends, like, why you never smile? She goes, why, you say something funny? I just give away smiles all day? And he was like, what's going on?
You know, there's, when I went, I used to go, well, now I haven't been back for like 3 years. Last time I visited was New Year's 2020, right before COVID. And so, and I, you know, I want to go back terribly, but now with other unrest also in other places in the world, as of the time we're recording this podcast, it seems like that's just, it's not a good time to do this kind of travel in general. So it's hard because my grandma is still there and, you know, she's elderly and, you know, it's hard because my mom is her only child, you know, so like me and my mom is everything that she has. Both me and my mom are here. But yeah, when I would go back, and it used to be like once a year, usually maybe even, to visit after we moved, I would, you know, step off the airplane. I would have to put on my like Russian mode. And I've journaled for most of my life. And I remember like being on the plane, writing down like, okay, here goes my Russian mode, like activate, where, you know, you have to have a poker face because, you know, if you're walking around smiling, people either think you're high or they think, something's wrong with you, or they will think that you're feeble and weak. And it's like an invitation to steal from you or do something funny. And it's like, you know, I get asked like, really, is it really like that? And it's like, yeah, it is. I mean, maybe you might not like notice it right away, but you do enough, like Moscow is a huge city. You go from one place to another. It takes you a while. You go different transportations like bus, metro, train, something else. And throughout all of these commutes, you're going to experience it at some point. If you're walking around smiling, you're going to get the message at some point. I'm pretty certain. But I still have a little bit of that even in the United States, where, you know, I was thinking about that today, where I don't, if I'm out with someone who is very extroverted and they're talking to everyone, and we're close, like I'll probably kind of mimic that too. And I can be extroverted as well. But in general, just being out in public, I catch myself avoiding eye contact still. And that's definitely a trait from living in Moscow. It's just, you don't make eye contact with random people because, and you know, and here's my psychic perspective, but that's, you know, that's not going to be relevant for most people. But for some who are sensitive or identify as empaths, or maybe even, I will dare say, neurodivergent, where you know you're a little different than other people and you feel things differently. Eye contact can be something that you know, it connects you to another person. And there are some people that are really dark as a product of that environment. I don't think it's necessarily their fault, but you make an eye contact with a person who is like really in a dark place, and it impacts you in some ways. It's draining just to be there and to do normal things. And I've heard that from friends of mine who have never left. They've been there their whole life. And it's like, that's what Russians themselves say. It's not like, oh, I went to America, came back, and here's my observation. It's like that's kind of how life is. And you know, I think it's hard to comprehend if someone hasn't experienced it. But at the same time, if someone has experienced it, you can never take for granted being in an environment where people are kind and friendly and open and welcoming. So yeah.
Yeah, and like, there's a vast difference. Well, I have so much to say. For one, I read this week for the first time in my life. I speak 9 languages. I know you speak multiple too. And I know, and someone wrote that there's studies going on right now that every language that you speak has a different personality. And I'm like, That's so true. Right? Which would make sense now when you say I put my Russian mask, my persona on.
I definitely have a Russian persona, that's for sure. And that's a different persona. Like the way that I carry myself is vastly different. And I had to develop it to survive there. But then I had to develop a different persona here so that I'm not like a, so that I can adapt basically, to the local environment.
What do your friends who are still in Russia think of America?
Well, first of all, they all left. Both two of my best friends in the past 2 years, with everything going on, which I'm not gonna necessarily speak on that because I'm still to this day we will see what happens. I am a dual citizen still to this day, and so you know, one of the biggest fears that I have is like, I won't be able to go see my grandma, you know, at some point when things calm down. So hopefully they will, you know, but you know, outside of naming things, I think it will make sense what I'm talking about, you know, with all the changes taking place and all the, you know, the shifting of the way that things feel over there, you know, a lot of older generations, they're kind of used to it because for example, my grandma, her grandmother survived the blockade of Leningrad, and that's World War II. And, you know, they had to basically eat mice. And, you know, there were some instances of cannibalism because people were, you know, blockaded in the city. And there was nothing to eat for a long time. So they're familiar. And then before that, you know, overthrowing of tsars and tsars being extremely cruel. A lot of Russian people generationally are almost expecting bad things to happen just because it's just such a rough country. And it's the way things, you know, go in terms of war and conquest and even just the rulership of Russia, the leading powers have treated Russian people has been just really not good. And historically there's always this like, oh, when's going to be the next thing? And so there's a lot of older generations like my grandma that are like, we've survived that, we've survived Napoleon, we've survived Hitler, and we're going to survive whatever else that happens. And it's just, or we won and we'll all die. Like, it's just, it's a kind of acceptance. But my generation, you know, maybe older too, I'm not sure, but my friends and my peers, so we're like late 20s, mid 30s. At this point, you know, most of people our age have either tried or have successfully left at this point. Not all, but the ones who have any kind of sort of privilege. One of my best friends, she got married, and her and her husband, they earn pretty well. They're in a good place, and so they migrated to Europe as digital nomads, both of them, which is a great opportunity. And then my other friend, not so financially sustainable, her and her mom, they had to sell their apartment in the center of Moscow, which is, I mean, it costs a lot, but in times like this, everything's down. So, you know, you're losing money on it, obviously. You know, it's a generational apartment. It's a huge, tremendous value, even like on level beyond money, but they had to do it. And they migrated to Colombia, South America, and they're, you know, trying to find their footing there now. So I think that describes kind of how they feel. They just don't, they can't be there. It's insufferable for most people.
So I'm going to ask you a question that comes from me personally, and it's not going to sound professional at all, but one of my biggest problems here in America and the modern West. So when I speak of the modern West, I speak of Canada, North America, Australia, New Zealand, UK, the Netherlands, right? Germany too, like the modern West, the traditional modern West. But one of my biggest problems has been with migrating here is that the level of disrespect for the well-being of this country, right? Like oh, it's so harsh, and oh, we have it so hard. And I'm almost asking you as almost like advice, because my problem is, you think you have it hard? Oh my God, all your labels, what a luxury. Because that's why people hate me, right? I call all these things, I called it a luxury. Self-sabotaging is a luxury. Having all these mental Pokemon labels is a luxury. Suffering that you didn't get a second PlayStation 5 for Christmas, that's a luxury. But yeah, so give anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was... You know, it's a question of self-restraint for me at this point in order to, you know, not over-communicate how I truly feel. I'm a very passionate person. I was, as a child, very non-confrontational. I was maybe not shy, but, like, you know, just kind of reserved, I guess. But Russia itself made me... I had to be confronted, whether I liked it or not. I had to go through like difficult situations with people in general, from school to adults, like everyone there. And at some point, you know, I had this, like, I would fawn all the time and just, you know, start explaining myself. And then at some point I was like, no, I have to really change this tactic. And so I became very confrontational myself. Because I'm like, okay, I'm going to wait for this. I'm just going to go for it actually myself. So I know where it's going. Let me just cut to the chase. So, you know, and because of this quality, you know, it's a touchy subject, because Americans that have, like, for example, I'm in South Carolina, right? In South Carolina, a lot of people, especially like maybe areas smaller than, let's say, Charleston, there's a lot of, you know, people that come, tourists from all over the world here. It's like, it's more common for people who are like more well-traveled to be here. But, you know, you go to smaller places, you go to, even I lived in like the capital of South Carolina, which is called Columbia. It's a pretty small town, but it's like a city technically. And a lot of people there have never left Columbia, like never left South Carolina, you know, and it's, or they, maybe they have, but they went to like Florida, Disneyland or something like that, like close by, you know, basically almost neighboring state. And so, you know, the point of reference, and it's not a judgment necessarily, but the point of reference is so small. It's like all you've known is this. And all you've also known is what you read on the internet about other places, but you've never experienced them. And so when people complain about how hard it is or how bad it is in the United States, my biggest thing, because if I start like the polemics of like, listen, you know, you go to Eastern Europe and then we will talk, you know, it's like, okay.
That's me, by the way. That's me. That's me.
There are times, and, you know, I'm not going to go into discussing my, you know, political view. One thing I will say is I always vote, because I think it's a privilege and a right, and I like to exercise it. However it matters.
Wait, no. You need to say that one again. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, so the voting, it's not just a right. It's also a privilege, and that had to be earned by a lot of different strata of the population that did not have it for a long time, you know, including women as well. And so, you know, here's the thing, people start talking about whether it matters or not. And it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, but in Russia, that's, you know, also a question, because it's like, you know, when I was living there, I remember there was an election where the TV announcement said that 120% of the 120% of the population, not 100, 120, voted for Putin. Just, you know, some other percentages came across and also voted for him. But, you know, they said it was like a mistake, but I think it wasn't. I think that's how they, you know, that it was calculated on that particular year. You know, so yeah, there is, yeah, I'm sure there's places that your vote doesn't count. But it's like, even if it was the case in the United States, which I don't believe, but people say, but it doesn't count. But like, even if it doesn't, it's like still the fact that I can go and place it makes me feel like I'm doing, like, I, as a member of this society, as an American, I'm, you know, taking this opportunity that I have that a lot of people didn't have before. And I'm going ahead and doing something with it for what it's worth. So I vote. I don't really, and it, this is the one piece where I think a lot of conversations, you know, people who are only mostly familiar with living in America, they maybe that's where we kind of lose each other oftentimes, and that's okay. But it's like, I sincerely don't really care who the president is. I'm going to say why. Because that's not going to change whether or not I'm an American. It's just not going to make me want to go anywhere else. And I'm going to say, and so people say, why? Well, what if it's like fundamentally against what you believe is this person in power and that's what they believe? And I'm going to say this. In America, so far as I've lived here, regardless of who the ruling party is, regardless of who is in power, regardless of who the president is, I still have, as a citizen, a lot of rights that cannot be taken away from me. And yes, sometimes, you know, things change, but there are some fundamental things, such as a choice of building a business or a choice of being gainfully employed, or a choice of where I'm going to live in what state, you know, where I'm going to, what community am I going to become a member of, what I can do, the projects I can work on, that's all, that always stays there. And coming from Russia, that's not really the case, because the ruling power has this ability to immediately strip everyone's rights or immediately shut a whole segment of population down. And when I tell this to people in the United States, it's like, yeah, but things happen on a political level. But it's like, I don't know how to get across that it's never as severe as it is in other places. So given this opportunity to be here, to live here, I choose to be patriotic in the sense of, like, I'm loyal. Mm-hmm. I'm not planning on moving anywhere else. And another thing is like, presidents change, political climates change. It doesn't last forever. There are countries where it does, once again, where the ruling party never changes and nothing, like, it's, once someone is in power, they're in power until, you know, the cows come home, until something happens, until aliens invade this earth. Like, there is no choice. But here, there is a little bit of a, you know, there's choice, there's change. But one thing still kind of remains is there's a lot of freedom to create a life that you want to create on your terms, and hard work is necessary. But it actually leads you somewhere. Like, you work hard on things, you actually get somewhere, usually in the United States. In other places, you work on things and it's probably nothing's ever going to change. And so having chosen to be loyal to United States, like, in the sense that that's where I'm building my life, you know, I'm not gonna be jumping ship when there's a storm. And if the captain is not the captain I personally selected, well, then it's a captain that I didn't select. You know, I'm still sailing on that ship. I'm still headed to the world that we are co-creating here in the United States. And, you know, and I have one little piece is, yeah, there's so much going on in the world. And I feel like the United States is like one of the safest places to be. And yes, that might change one day. But as of right now, what is there to complain about? You know, there's wars going all over the world. People are dying and there's, you know, terrible conditions where you are having to work hard to survive, but it's not like you're working towards improvement or creating something, you know, better or bigger. It's just like you're literally just surviving. And here, you know, you have so many resources. COVID hit, a lot of people got a paycheck, myself included, you know, because the opportunities weren't there, the work I was doing wasn't available. And so what does the government do? You know, you get something to survive on for most people. Guess what? In Russia, do you think you got something during pandemic? No. Do you think you got something in other places to just help you survive? Most of the places, no. People don't consider that.
Yeah. Oh, sing, can you see? Oh my God, this was like the best trailer of America.
Very, very passionate rant.
Oh, so good. And I felt that deeply. And one thing about the voting is because everyone can, especially now with, you know, the resources of the internet, everyone can complain about corruption, et cetera. I'm like, first of all, the whole world is corrupt. That's not exclusive to certain places. The difference is on a citizen level is that corruption in my country is available for also us poor people. Like corruption is like the amount of times where I paid cops off because I was driving 100 kilometers.
It's expected. They just ask you for it.
Exactly. So that's the only difference. But what I really, really, like that one, tears in the eyes, that voting is a privilege, is a right and a privilege. And what I think, regardless if it matters or not, again, we don't even need to go down that road. It's a energetic and spiritual stance. I'm taking responsibility. I am doing my part, right? Because having to be a part of something takes up responsibility, takes up more space. Whereas everyone who doesn't vote is like, I wasn't part of it and it was all outside of me. And I'm like, you're not paying attention to what you're saying. But whether they win or not, you took up space. And it's coming back to responsibility, sovereignty, integrity. Like these are all these big terms that make you bigger and make you an active participant in life instead of just a passive, you know, side bystander.
And, you know, I will say too, like, would I, because, you know, the elections are, I think maybe still held in Russia every now and then, you know, even if it is, even if it is what it is. But, you know, would I, if I happened to, I think I was there one time and I think I turned 18 and it was maybe it was like election time, you know, would I vote there? I can vote from, you know, another place where I live. I would say no. And I will say why. It's not because, you know, I don't like support the regime or whatever. That I wouldn't necessarily even say any of that. Like, am I still a citizen there? Yeah, technically I am. But am I building my life there? No. Am I employed there actively? No. Do we have some property and we pay taxes? Yes. But like, am I actively living there? No. And so I think, you know, to me, it's almost like, even if, you know, regardless of how elections actually occur, it almost feels like, you know, if I had a vote, I'm influencing, you know, an environment where I'm not even participating necessarily. So it's like, that doesn't make sense to me, but it's like where you are, where you live, like I'll go and I vote in local elections too. Even if I don't really know like who does what or who are the people running, like very quickly 10-minute Google search of like at least what they claim they represent or their initiatives. I mean, it's pretty easy. It's like, you know, does it really matter? Maybe not, but it's like, it matters to me because I live here, you know? And so, you know, I'll add a little bit here. It's, you know, there was a time in my life where I lived in this community that I mentioned already, that it's called Columbia. It's also in South Carolina. It's like a small town, but it's a city. It's both. And it's the capital. So while I was living there, I got really involved in the local community. My business wasn't online at the time. It was basically I was working with local mom and pop shops to do their social media. And so I knew so many folks there. And It was a beautiful feeling. But during that time, you know, what was very obvious to me is if you don't get involved in your community and you are actively operating in it, like maybe you have a business in a community or a store or things like that, you gotta know people. And the only way to do that is if you get yourself exposed in that environment. And so I feel the same way on the larger scope in relation to United States as a whole. You know, if you feel that you want to assert your belonging and you have this right and this privilege that you get to go and you get to put in a say as to what kind of future you see for this country and for yourself, you and yours, then, you know, it's worth doing it because it doesn't take that long. But it took so much blood, sweat, and tears of the people who didn't have that right to vote. And that was, like I said, a lot of different segments of the population in the United States. Basically, for a while, it was, you know, just white men that could do that. But later on, thankfully, it's no longer
right.
That.
And one thing I really, and I'm saying these things ad nauseum, American public, first of all, we can hold multiple truths, right? Multiple things can be true at one. And while I absolutely don't want to diminish individual struggle, American poverty is still a walk in the park compared to the rest of the world. Like American poverty and I think the rest of the world's richness kind of like, they're not the same. So when we're going like, hey, hardship, yes. Individual trouble, yes. Individual struggles, also yes. But still, compared to the rest of the world, Americans' poverty is still a walk in the park. Just by proximity and environment.
I have a really good friend that I've known for years, over a decade. Like good friend, like brother type, you know, connection there. You know, thick and thin, whatever's happening, we might not see each other for a couple years. You know, I could call him up and be like, hey, you know, something's up. He would come and help me out. Likewise, the other way around. And he's older and he's been living in the north first, up north in Pennsylvania, came down to South Carolina. And, you know, you could consider that he's kind of homeless. He lives on someone's property. He helps like with woodwork, like cutting wood and produce. They have like a business. So he's helping out there. He has a place to stay on that property, but you can't call it like a home or even an apartment. You know, he has a bike. He has a phone. He has like a heater and a fan. And, you know, he could improve his situation even further. But that's like, that's homeless, and it's not everyone's situation, but that's pretty challenging as it is. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, in some cases that I see here, you know, a homeless person very often does have like an iPhone. And when I say this to my friends, like that, you know, grew up in Russia, wherever they are now, or when I was sharing these stories, when I would still be able to visit, people don't believe that, because you go out on the street in even Moscow, like you said, I mean, it's beyond what is in the rest of Russia, maybe St. Petersburg, maybe a couple more cities, but I mean, most of it is rural and really like dilapidated, just the falling apart Soviet buildings. I mean, it's a rich country that doesn't spend that money on people historically almost at all, ever. Even, you know, Soviet times, at least some things got built, but, you know, that there was a lot of other things that weren't good. So, Yeah, you see someone homeless and they could die any day because the conditions are absolutely horrendous. The survival is so difficult. Another illustration I like to show is, you know, homelessness is hard regardless. It's a very psychologically challenging. But homelessness where you can have resources, like every now and then you can get a hotel room, or you could go and pick up a couple jobs, someone can give you a bike, or you could have an iPhone which would allow you to, you know, go to Starbucks, plug into a charger, charge it, maybe look for some opportunity. Like that's still way more resource than you have absolutely nothing and it's freezing out and you have to sleep in the metro and there's absolutely no resources available. And you know, this can be illustrated also a different way is, you know, when if someone were to go to, let's say, Moscow and take a ride on a metro train, which is just like a regular transportation method, and they would look around and look at the faces of people, you would see a lot of women in men as well, but you know, women kind of age a little differently than men. Most of Russia is Caucasian, which means there's a slight difference in skin color depending from on the region they're from, but you would classify them as white, according to, you know, the categories of ethnicities that we see in the United States. So there aren't that many Hispanic or black folks. It's mostly people from different regions of ex-Soviet republics and things like that. So, but you look at the faces and people age so much faster. You're looking at someone who is in their maybe mid 30s or 40s. They look like you could give them 50 or something. You know, someone who is in their 50s might look like they're 70 years old. And that's not because of genetics. It's the hardship of life. You know, I was listening to a story today about a family that in the United States that worked really hard on the farm their whole lives. And, you know, their portraits, it's like, they look like they had a pretty hard life. You know, these portraits, they're still pretty young, but there's a lot of like this hardship, it takes a toll. And that's for most people. So just survival there in itself is challenging for most people. But then you add homeless or mentally ill. And you know, mental illness is not even really recognized, and you know, homelessness, you don't get any resources. So it's just like everything that you think is bad in the United States, you make it 100 times worse in your mind, and you can maybe start imagining how it is in other places.
there's this Slavic meme. I'm in a lot of like Euroslav, Amerislav, like Facebook groups, and we're mostly just, you know, joking about Slav in the Balkan and Europesti. It's just anyway. And there's one meme that where a guy goes like, "Oh, I think I'm depressed," and then like a thought pattern goes off. But my nation doesn't believe in depression. Oh, guess I'm healed. And because like mental illness doesn't exist in the majority. I would even say the majority of non-modern West world. It's not a thing.
No. And well, and I will say this. A lot of people are, if there's something mentally wrong with them, when, you know, when I would visit Moscow and I would, you know, talk to people that aren't just necessarily my direct close friends, but there's a lot of depression and maybe not anxiety. It's just survival is so hard and so, you know, day to day that there is no time for anxiety. There is no room for anxiety. You don't even know what that means because it's like I am wondering if I'm going to make it through this year. Like I don't have anxiety. I have like direct fear that I'm not going to make it. Like it's actually kind of worse. But you know, there a lot of people have issues. The other problem is most Russians treat it, you know, it's a stereotype, but it's actually fairly true. You know, they would treat it with vodka. Like you would go and you would drink. You have a problem, you know, go get drunk and be hungover for a couple of days and suffer. And then you'll be fine because you'll be like, okay, well, before I get drunk next time, I got to give it a little break. A lot of people are alcoholics. And you know, when I have a little bit of that running in the family on my Russian side as well. And you know, I've had issues with alcohol myself because I have this very, strong aversion to whatever medications they prescribe for mental ailments in the United States. I've never taken, I mean, I've maybe taken like an Adderall in college just to try it without prescription. Because someone said, hey, you know, it's a study drug. I was like, okay, let's see. You know, it was like cocaine. It's just, there's no difference. Like, yeah, you know, I've tried things that college students try, but I've never been on a kind of prescription or a kind of like a go get a diagnosis. And I know I have a lot of things. Like, I know I have anxiety. I know I've been seriously depressed a couple of times. You know, I know that I could, if I wanted to get a diagnosis, I could get quite a few. But I sincerely believe I've had seen people become, and this is hard to say because that's such a controversial topic, but I've seen people become irreversibly damaged by these drugs, like mm-hmm. irreversibly damaged. Mm-hmm. I've lost someone I loved very much who was put on Adderall at 6 years old. And then while through high school sought other drugs to help him come down from his prescription, became an opiate addict, which there is an epidemic of that in the United States. And unfortunately he passed away at the age of, 27. So that was about 8 years ago for me. So that's, you know, so it's a still hard memory because of the brilliant, brilliant, beautiful young man. We were in love. He couldn't, you know, stop using. And when I asked him, like, what do you think is the reason you became an addict? And he said, 100% the fact that my parents put me on these pills when I was little, because like my life became a nightmare because I was constantly on this, like almost like on cocaine, because that's what Adderall is. Like, it's the same effect. It's a stimulant. So imagine being six and going through that. And then the rest of your life, you're just rebalancing and you know, and you end up on the other spec. Like, that's just such horror. Like, it's horror. I've had people my age, I have no interest in having children, but I have a lot of people, my peers who are, you know, who are parents already. And when they tell me that they're putting their kid on Adderall, I'm like, I don't know what to say because I'm not a parent, but it just kills me to hear that, because it's like, I mean, that can change someone's life forever. And that's just a child. And so, yeah, so, you know, there is a trade-off. It's like, do you want a country full of alcoholics because they have actual issues and there is no help for that? Or do you want so much help for that, that it becomes an addiction in itself, the medication? And, you know,
and you're crippling your children. The moment you put young children on any type of medication, or even teenagers, you're crippling them because you're robbing them of the opportunity to heal, to learn how to regulate and how to deal with life.
There is a trend on TikTok where young...
It's a horrible phrase already. It's already a horrible phrase. Okay.
Oh, this is gonna make your blood boil. But no, but there's a trend on TikTok where I'm a millennial. I watch my reports of what's going on TikTok on YouTube by people my age talking about them and like making fun of them. Basically, that's one of my favorite entertainment forms. It's like, I don't actually have to look at that, but I get the synopsis of what's going on. Well, there's a trend, and I've seen a couple of videos, you know, I'll pop in on TikTok here and there, but it's like, I've seen maybe one or two, but no, apparently it's a big movement where young people, kids, teenagers, tweens, which is like 12, 13, whatever, you know, there's a trend that people are faking disorders and mental illness because it's like cool.
And they're having actual tics.
Yeah. And then there's like a whole side of TikTok with the algorithm where it's like it keeps suggesting, you know, if you keep talking about it, that's what you'll come across. There's a whole, you know, like there's a whole compilation of folks talking about like how life is better with antidepressants and mood stabilizers, even if you don't like completely think that something's off. It's like, how do you go and still how do you get the prescription if your case is not so strong? And I mean, I don't know. To me, there is no difference between that and I mean, just doing street drugs at that point. Because, like, you just want the script for it. But it's like, how is that different? But except, you know, it's like the drugs in America, you know, they're, the way they're formulated, that's a whole mystery in itself. Because it's like there's so many... I mean, okay, I won't even go there. I'll just give you a little esoteric, you know, like just a little symbol there. The symbol, and so I'm an esoteric scholar. I've been researching, you know, the realms of ancient traditions, ancient mysteries. I've been sitting with shamans. I've been working with ayahuasca for over 5 years now. This has been my path in life. And one thing I will say is that humans, we don't respond to language as quickly as we respond to symbols, because it's subconscious. You don't have to read it. You don't have to know what it is. You don't have to have ever seen it again. But symbols have been used for so long in humanity that they are ingrained in our psyche. So you see something, because it's a symbol, it goes through, it bypasses your conscious logical reasoning abilities, and it goes straight to your subconscious. And so with you interacting then with the symbol, the meaning, it plays itself out, whether you know it or not. So one symbol I want to bring up here is the American symbol for medicine. It's going to be interesting because I know most of your listeners probably know what it is. You know, it's two snakes, you know, there's like a little wings, there's a little ball on the top of it. And this is what nurses use as well, I believe, and paramedics. That's not a symbol for medicine. The symbol for medicine you will see everywhere else in the world, where it's one snake and it's like a little chalice with like a leg. And so the snake kind of curls around it and then is like putting its tongue out, sticking its tongue out into the chalice. It's the snake poison. It's the medicine. So basically, it's the medicine is the extract of the snake poison. And there's a whole story around that. That's a medical symbol. The symbol of two snakes around a stick with wings and a little ball at the top, that's not a symbol for medicine. That's a caduceus. That's an ancient symbol for Hermes, Mercury. Thoth is another name. Odin, some people associate as well. It's a god of tricksters and commerce and business and deals and, innovation, but in a sense of commercial gain. And that's the symbol for medicine in the United States. It's not about medicine. Pharmaceuticals is not about medicine. It's about money and sleight of hand, you know, a placebo effect. So it's important to know what Rx means on that screen, you know, on the script that you're getting. And that's the symbol used for retrograde as well in astrology. So, you know, essentially it's sending whatever ailment you have, the script is there to send it back in motion, but then the illness will cycle back in. There's nothing is created to heal anything. Everything is created to make money off of it consistently. Whether it's to create an addiction, then heal the addiction. Now you have something to stay off of your addiction. So you're constantly needing more. You know, you get overweight because fast food. Now you need drugs to lose weight. And so now you're buying drugs. It's yes, it's a part of capitalism, but, you know, and it's not that you have to crash the entire system down. I think the most important piece for people is to realize, like, I have to be aware. It's my responsibility to develop critical thinking and to be able to discern for myself, like, whether I want to participate in certain elements or not, because you have that choice here in the United States. Some things, yes, are corrupt. Some things, yes, are off. But how about that personal power, that development of that knowledge and discernment, so that you don't have to be a victim to this? And it's attainable.
First of all, I love how we went from, oh my God, America is amazing, to, oh my God, this system. But one thing that I would like to respond to that is, first of all, yes to everything you just said. But my point is, just because a system exists and a commerce model, right, a financial incentive exists, as is the pharmaceutical industry, doesn't mean we need to utilize it. Mm-hmm. Just like there's bars. I don't go to bars. Like, they can exist all the fuck they want. I don't go to them. I don't go to a McDonald's. Like, I love that it exists, but I don't go to them, right? So, and that's the same for certain, like, for these pharmaceutical models. I'm like, okay, they exist. Now it's my responsibility, again, active participation in life, to first of all, making sure that I eliminate as much as possibilities to even having to utilize that system, right? That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. We don't know, because having to use them is so far down the drain.
Go on. I want to say there's like such a contrast, because I find that for most part, like Russian people, okay, yes, as a culture, there's like, I mean, it's a really difficult culture, and it's difficult to understand the language, the history. It is very deep. It is very complicated. And Russian people are as well. I mean, you will find your fair share of, you know, people on the street being drunks and, you know, and being inappropriate, and all they live for is just some more of that kind of entertainment for themselves. Of course, I mean, that's everywhere. But for the most part, majority of Russians are deeply intellectual individuals. They read like insane amounts of not just information, news, social media, but like books and literature. All the Russian literature, I'm not personally a fan of. I have a couple of my picks, but the depressing.
Like your Dostoevsky?
No, I decided I'm not going to read it in school. And my teacher said, well, if you don't read it, you're getting an F. And I said, well, I guess I'm getting an F because I'm not reading this. Because I started reading it and it started giving me like depression. And it was putting me in the world that was horrendous. And I just, from the first few pages, I was like, I'm not going there. I'm not putting this in my consciousness. No, that's just a no for me. Although he's a brilliant writer, but, you know, nothing against Dostoevsky himself, but it's like certain types of writing, I'm like, no. But, you know, there's so much depth and suffering and pain and knowledge and wisdom and so much. And so Russians are constantly thinking, overthinking. And the funny thing is whatever is going on there, no matter how bad it is, people know what is going on. Like, they know. Like, some want to live in this kind of maybe illusion to just survive once again, to just make it through the day, because they just can't. If they think about what's really going on, they're not going to be able to make it. It's just beyond them. So there is not even blame for that, at least from my point of view. But there's, you know, most people know, always, like, are thinking. They're always trying to outsmart, you know, all this stuff they have to deal with, from the government to other people, corrupt officials, businesses, this, that, you know, there's just so much. And you have to stay like very mentally vigilant in order to even be able to navigate all of this. I find in the United States, it's like, that's not really a requirement. You can actually, you know, you can, I would say, it pays off to cultivate ignorance, because there are instances where they say like, oh, you can't get away if you don't know the laws. But there are instances where you kind of can, if you're like, oh, I didn't know. Oh, I don't understand. Like, there's opportunities for that. And so sometimes I feel like it's beneficial to kind of be a little oblivious. It makes it easier to you know, to do what you do or be who you are. But I find that that's, you know, while a Russian can navigate through this complex kind of obstacle course, and they're probably not going to get, you know, far, but they're, you know, they make it through that day. Here in the United States, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of corrupt things, and there's a lot of things that are maybe not perfect. But it's like, but people generally, I find, they're so drawn to think less sometimes that they're like, well, if it's there, I guess I have to be part of it. And it's like, let me get angry. But it's like, but you don't have to be part of it. Guess what? You don't have to go where everyone else goes. A certain store doesn't agree with your standpoint politically. you don't have to be so angry about it. You can just not go there. And it's the same with online. Like, someone's sharing something you don't like. There's so much, and I feel like it's mostly American, where it's like, God, I have to tear that person down because, oh my God, you know, it's like, don't watch that. Why are you so, it's like, why do you have to have so much anger towards something that exists? Why don't you look at why you feel that you still have to participate in it? And I think one of the greatest opportunity costs there is that if you don't go where everyone else goes, especially in smaller communities, if you don't go where everyone else goes and you don't shop where everyone else shops and you don't like what everyone else likes online or on TV, you get judged. People will be like, well, why don't you, you know, why have you stopped? And I think, you know, a part of American culture, and part of it is also kind of endearing, but it's like, that feeling of like belonging is so important that a lot of times people are not willing to sacrifice it. They would rather be angry at a structure than step out of that same structure and say, I'm just not going to participate. Because one thing is you're complaining about something that probably other people feel also upset about. And then you can get even more like this sense of bonding and this community, like, yeah, no, let's cancel this. I'm against it, right? But if it's just like, okay, I am actually against it and I no longer participate, it's everyone's like, well, what makes use? But why did you just stop it? We're still doing it. Why have you stopped? And to a lot of people, that's a greater fear than doing something they don't believe in. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And let me make very clear, companies and corporations, they don't do activism, they do marketing. They do not do activism. They do not take stances. They verbally use some word vomit on some letters and they just do marketing. Mm-hmm. And it operates from this, definitely a sense of belonging and wanting to, signal to the rest of the world, right? Like, look, I am a good person. Because that's what it originates back down to. Like, look, I am a good person. I'm on the good side.
Validate.
Except me. Right.
Virtue
right.
signaling. Virtue yeah. signaling. Yes. And, you know, and I have to say, this is something that I've kind of researched a little bit more on like a psychological level, because I was curious, quite honestly, about my own patterns. You know, there are cultures like Soviet Union where individualism is more accepted. Why? Because it's actually easier to make it on your own. And that's what people accept. But at the same time, it comes at a price of you are writing a public transportation piece on the way to wherever, and everyone's looking at you like, or else, you know, and you have to kind of look at people that way too, because everyone's out for themselves. Yeah, that's a big piece. But at the same time, individualism is accepted. Like if if you're in a group of people and they say, you know, oh, I love this, and you say, I hate this, it's going to be like, well, F you, but let's keep talking. Like, okay, you know, whatever, here's a shot or something. Like, yeah, we're still having a conversation. Like it's like, okay, well, okay, I'm not going to change my mind. You're not going to change yours. Moving That's on to it. Something else. There's like, right. No one's going to like throw over a table and walk out and, you know, start like, that just doesn't really happen. It's like, it's accepted that individualism kind of takes priority. And it's also accepted that unless it's someone that's very close to you, it's like, given something, a crisis, you know, people, and it's kind of sad, but it's the, just the way of being that I've observed, where, you know, it's like survival of the fittest kind of, it's like, well, it's either you or me, you know, and I'm not going to choose you. I'm going to choose me. Like, that's normal. In a society like that, but it's been historically like that. It was historically ingrained into the evolution of, you know, people who live there, that's the better chance of survival. I feel like in the United States, the better chance of survival is more collective, more tribal almost. And so if you are, that's why the marketing here and the politics, there's such a strong play on like which team. It's not five teams. It's not like you have a lot of choice, because then it's like Like, that's too much choice. Like, what team? It has to be two teams in sports, in politics, businesses, Coca-Cola and Pepsi. You know, you have two. You have Verizon and T-Mobile. You have Netflix and Hulu. You have Apple and Android. Like, it's always two. And it's always like, I'm Android and I'm Apple. And,
team. Oh, my God. You have I texted that person and I got like the green letters. Oh my God, that person doesn't have an iPhone.
I'm kind of one of those people.
Yo, I'm dead serious. I have seven phones, but I have an iPhone and the other ones. I'm like, oh my God, that person doesn't have an iPhone.
I know. And then sometimes, one time I had a group text and that one person didn't have an iPhone. And I was like, you're not going to be in our group text. So I texted them separately. I'm like, since you have an Android, I'm just going to do a communication with you.
I'm going to shame you.
I just thought it would mess up the blue, white, you know.
It does.
It's so
like,
funny.
There is a convenience to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps you. It help. Well, it's like it's a model where your sense of identity you don't really have to decide on. You just have to pick.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And oh my God, we went down rabbit holes. Can we do a part two of this?
Yeah, let's do part two. Oh my God, I didn't realize what time it was. Holy smokes! Wow.
Okay, wait.
This stuff forever.
Look, we can do part two, three, four. We can make it a whole series.
I'm a chatty Slav. I like
same. Look, we can make this a Mary Slav with Fearless Wealth. Like, we can make it a whole series.
Let's do a series. Bar and Cat. The chatty Slavs.
So, just for my reference, are you... you're Katerina in English.
Yes. Sorry,
is it Yekaterina?
No, it's actually just with a K.
Okay.
So it's Katerina. The reason for that is my dad actually came up with the name. I think he had a little bit of a kind of premonition or something, because he's not Russian, and my mom thought she was having a boy. And I think they didn't do the testing where you can see the child before I was born. And I think right before I was born, she was told, she's having a girl. She's like, well, I don't have a name picked out. And so my dad was like,
cancel
Katerina. And she wrote me down just like he said. She's like, oh, yeah, I love it. But it's without E. And so Russians had trouble with it my whole life, because they're like, it's Ekaterina, right? I'm like, no. They're like, that's not how that goes.
Yeah, no, I was wondering, because I was referring to you as Yekaterina too, right? And I'm like, oh, wait, let me actually check because of citizenship.
So my legal name is Katerina. I also go by Kat, so it's whatever you prefer.
Okay, look. Let's wrap it up for today, because we have so much more to discuss. For everyone listening, there's coming a new series to you, The Two Chatty Amerislavs, here so with Fearless World. And we're going to make it a whole series, so ready.
We're going to have different topics for different, because I feel like we can talk about specific things for a very long time.
We're solving the world right here.
Solving the world, right? We're more like slaving the world. Oh my God.
So
okay,
good.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I'm very excited.
Okay, so I'll put, I'm not even, do you have any offerings right now? I'll put anything everywhere in the comments regardless, but
yeah, I would say for shout out. Anyone who wants to just connect, most of my work and most of just my life and what I'm doing and how I'm feeling is all on my Facebook page. So the best thing to do is to follow me on Facebook. You can friend request. That's kind of my leading platform. And I like to share my life, but that's also where I'll go live and pull some cards. If you're interested in the esoteric or the art and art modeling aspects, that's where all of that also is.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Again, I wrote all the topics down, and they're going to be more and more. So everyone, this is what you're going to do. You're going to click on all the things. You're going to do the follow, friend request. And we'll be here very soon again. So thank you so much for being.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait for more.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wait. Were you almost hanging up, leaving us, leaving me and everyone in this podcast without liking, subscribing, and putting on that bell notification? Nah, that's not cool. Come on, do it. And if you're feeling extra feisty today, share, tag me, and tell me what you like the most about the episode. Let's hear it in the comments. Let's hear it on all the platforms. I'll see you in the next episode.